1340WNBS.com presents The Neil Bradley Show.
Welcome to the show. Coming up on today's program, it is a busy one. Josh Planos, he's been a busy young man. He's written a few articles for the Washington Post. We'll have links to that included with this story posted at 1340WNBS.com. And we will talk. He wrote about how he thought why Ole Miss could take down Alabama. That happened. Also, his thoughts on why Ohio State probably should choose a quarterback and who he thinks that should be. And if you're a Notre Dame fan or know someone who is, they've been beset by injuries, the poor Irish, but how they control their own destiny, and they could still have an incredibly good season. And he discusses that in the article. So we'll talk about that and more. Also, yesterday was press conference day, so we will follow that with the entire press conference. The players at the Murray State press conference, Joey Chicoria, and the OVC specialist of the week, punter Landon Stratton, and also Mitch Stewart. So we'll bring that all to you. It's coming up after the Josh Planos interview. But before we get to that, let's get you caught up with the regional sports tip of the cap to the Murray High girls soccer team. Alex Poligrudo, a hat trick. Both Parker Grin and Brittany Lawson had two goals and assist as Murray High beat University Heights 8-1 in the All-A Classic sectional matchup. So Murray now moves on to the state tournament, the All-A Classic state tournament. They will take on Louisville Collegiate in the quarterfinals at 8 a.m. Saturday in Frankfort. Good day for Callaway County, too. Maddie Ballmer, a hat trick, and Reagan Pittenger had a goal and three assists. Callaway County rolls Mayfield 10-0. The Lady Lakers now 6-5 on the year heading into tonight's match with Murray High. Other girls' games saw Tillman beat St. Mary 4-0. Hopkins Hill a 4-0 winner over Caldwell County. Two goals each from Christian Adams and Brian Wilhelm propelled Callaway County to a 5-1 win over Mayfield. The Lakers improved to 9-3 on the year. In a battle of the Tigers, Murray High couldn't find the net, and a 7-0 loss to Hopkinsville. Murray now 5-7 heading into tonight's game with Callaway County. Crosstown Classic night for soccer. St. Mary beat Tillman 2-1. Trigg County rolled Lyon County 11-3. In volleyball, Marshall County takes Community Christian Academy 3-1. Union City swept, or actually beat Fulton County 3-1. Hickman County swept Fulton City. Ballard swept Mayfield. Tillman swept Livingston Central. Murray State shot a 572 through the first two rounds for a six-shot lead at their own Murray State Invitational being played at Miller Memorial Golf Course here in Murray. Tennessee Tech is in second at 578, Wright State third at 585. Murray State's Brock Simmons, the leader, with a 70-71 for a 1-under-141. After two rounds, teammate Matthew Zakutny at 142, just a shot back, and the Racers' Jared Gosser in seventh at 145. The final round is being played today. For the third time this season, Murray State's Sam Bedard is the Adidas OVC Setter of the Week. Bedard helped lead the Racers to a 3-0 week this past weekend at the Winthrop Invitational on Saturday, beating Winthrop and West Virginia. She averaged 13.2 assists per set in the three victories, posting 50 or more assists in two of the three matches. Bedard and the Racers begin defense of their 2014 OVC crown at SEMO Friday night. They're 10-1. Their only loss to a top 10 team. That was number 6 Washington a couple of weeks ago. The first public red and white inter-squad scrimmage for the University of Louisville men's basketball team has been set for 4:30 p.m. October 3rd at the Yum Center. University of Louisville's football team plays at North Carolina State at 12:30 earlier that day. Game time for the October 17th scrimmage will be set once the Cardinals know their football kickoff time against Florida State. Speaking of the Cardinals, let's check St. Louis Cardinals. They trailed virtually the whole game, but rallied for two runs in the bottom of the eighth for a 2-1 win over the Reds. Johnny Peralta singled in the tying run. Then Stephen Piscotty's RBI double put the Redbirds ahead. Jonathan Brockton gets the win in relief. Trevor Rosenthal gets his 47th save. The Cardinals stay 4 ahead of the Pirates, 6 ahead of the Cubs. Both those teams won. John Lackey takes the rubber tonight, looking for his 13th win in a 7:15 game. The airtime is 6:20 on WNBS. Cardinals pitcher Adam Wainwright cleared for baseball activities. He'd been out with a torn left Achilles since April, but he could work out of the bullpen in the playoffs. Can he start? The answer to that, I just don't think there's any way that's possible because he just hasn't had a chance to work up that arm stamina. That's why you have spring training. He hasn't really had a chance to do that, but he could give the Cardinals an inning or two if possible. That's actually a very good sign if that happens. Remember, it was not anything to do with his arm or shoulder, so that's not an issue, but stamina is an issue. Takes a lot to go out there and fire off 80, 90, 100 pitches, and right now Wainwright just simply couldn't do that. The news not as good on catcher Yadier Molina. He has a partially torn ligament in his left thumb. He's going to rest it for a week. The team's hopeful he'll return before October. It's in, again, his non-throwing hand, but we will see. The problem with that is not catching. I mean, long as he can catch without pain, he's all right to throw, but it's the batting. If, those thumbs, when you're holding a bat, extremely important, and it can really limit a lot of what you can do with the bat without the full use of the thumbs, at least somewhat pain-free. Tennessee Titans will be without starting right guard Chance Warmack for Sunday's game against the Colts. He has a sprained MCL, so he'll be out for a while. They hope to get him back by the October 11th game against Buffalo. Jamon Meredith will start in his place on Sunday. All right, that's going to wrap it up. Appreciate you being with us for the update. I'll take a break, and Josh Planos will be in. And we'll talk a lot of college football, and then we will follow that with the press conference from Murray State University. That's all coming up on today's show on 1340WNBS.com.
Tries to make a man miss, and he's into the end zone for the touchdown!
Racer football returns to Roy Stewart Stadium on Saturday, September 26th at 6 p.m. when Murray State welcomes the Tennessee Tech Golden Eagles. Enjoy family weekend with a morning 5K hosted by the Racer track and field team, followed by the evening football game. You won't look back at the games you watched from the couch. Be there. Football tickets are still available by calling 270-809-3000. For details, visit goracers.com.
Welcome back to the show. As promised, Josh Planos joins us. And, Josh, with a few articles last week, and one of those, you talk about timely and nailing it, why Ole Miss could topple Alabama. And it turns out that's exactly what they did. And a lot of what you pointed out in the article came true. And tell us why you thought you might need to write that article and why that happened.
Well, I don't know how revolutionary it was that I picked them. I mean, after all, ESPN did pick them to win the game. They gave them a slight edge using their FPI algorithm. But, you know, Ole Miss has just been terrific heading into that game. I know that they hadn't really played anybody, but they had been, you know, averaging, you know, 70-ish points a game. They totaled the most points through the first 2 weeks of the season of any team ever. And when you pair that with a defensive front line and a tall and lengthy secondary like they have, it just looks to be like a tough team to beat. And I think that there are a lot of questions about Alabama heading into that game. You know, despite them having already beaten the top 25 team in Wisconsin in their season opener, but to me, just top to bottom, Ole Miss just seemed to be a more dominant team. In the areas that they needed it most, which are, you know, the defensive line, the quarterback, and their corners. And, I think that really showed the other night. I know the score, you know, is a little bit closer I don't know if it was closer than people expected it to be, but it was, to me, it was closer than what game I saw. I thought Ole Miss, top to bottom, just, you know, ran through them and, really had some lucky plays, but also just clearly is in a better spot right now at this point in the season. And, you know, who knows? They might be the number one team in the country in a couple of weeks.
Well, they could be. The 30-10 lead that they had, it looked like they may pull away and blow it open. But you had a feeling Alabama would throw a couple of punches, and they did. But part of what great teams do, especially on the road, is find a way to withstand the punches and secure the victory. That's exactly what Ole Miss did. That's the mark of a great team. Teams that can do that, Josh, can win national championships.
I mean, I think you nailed it. Really, like you said, a lot of people, I think, had questions and were ready to turn off that game until they saw that Alabama was maybe going to make a run for it. And if anything, I think that just further convinced the voters that, you know, Ole Miss is a team that is, willing to step on the throat when necessary and, was able to, get out of Tuscaloosa with a win.
All right, then another head-scratching game was Ohio State and Northern Illinois. And you didn't write as much about the game, per se, as who Ohio State should start at quarterback. And I mean, folks really scratching their heads. A lot of Buckeyes fans really don't know what to think when you barely beat Northern Illinois. Who would have ever thought the week before Murray State would score more points against Northern Illinois? They got 26. Ohio State held to 20. You could have won a ton of money if anyone had bet on that one. That just shows you never know in college football.
Yeah, you know, 31.5-point underdogs entering the game. I think everyone kind of had this pegged as, you know, another blowout similar to what they did against Hawaii, you know, the week before. But really, Northern Illinois hung around and, you know, was one possession away from winning that game in the horseshoe, which, you know, would have been catastrophic for the, you know, the Buckeye boosters. But they were able to obviously pull it off. My article is more about, you know, they're at the situation where a lot of people are kind of requesting that Urban Meyer pick a quarterback, mm-hmm. and that makes a lot of sense from the team perspective. You want to have someone that you can fully buy in to, and that's not to say that the backup quarterback becomes, you know, obsolete or unimportant, but you want to know who your leader is. And right now they kind of have this, you know, topsy-turvy approach where, you know, if Cardell Jones misses a few passes or throws a few interceptions, they can throw in Barrett. To me, I know that Barrett, you know, also threw an interception in the second half, which he ended up playing and Jones did not. But Barrett is just top to bottom, I think, a better quarterback in terms of what he brings, you know, to the table. He broke 17 school records last year as a freshman. He had the most efficient passing season any Buckeye quarterback has ever had. And, you know, I know that Jones was the one who won them the national title, but Barrett was most certainly the one who got him there. And I would like to see him, you know, at least start a couple of weeks and see how that goes. But as of yesterday's press conference, Meyer said that he hadn't picked one. And, you know, I guess that'll keep fans kind of on the edge of their seat for, you know, the coming weeks.
And I've in back-to-back weeks, it's so odd that I've seen the two teams Ohio State plays. They get Western Michigan. The Racers just played them, and they're similar teams. So if Ohio State puts up a similar performance, I think Western Michigan would have a shot at pulling off the upset, but they can limit the interceptions. I really don't see that happening. So looming ahead, if no one is upset, now we have the Ohio State-Michigan State 1-2 in the poll. Will that be the same on November 21st, or can someone else creep in there if both of those teams continue to win?
Well, you know, at some point they're playing each other this season. So I think even if, you know, Michigan State were to lose by, you know, a field goal as time expired, I would assume that they would drop down, you know, a rank or two.
Right.
And so that's going to be tough for them to, obviously both of them can't run the table. But I think both of them are right now the most talented teams in the country. I think obviously Ole Miss has more first place votes than Michigan State, and for good reason, since they just beat Alabama. But, you know, considering what people thought Michigan State would be this season, I think they've surprised the most voters. I think Ole Miss, you know, was ranked reasonably high, and a lot of them dropping in the polls had to do with how poor they played in their bowl game last year. But I would expect, you know, Ole Miss or TCU to slide into that number two spot. You know, running the table in the SEC is just so, you know, difficult. But I think it would be tough for Ole Miss to make it work. But obviously someone has to come out of the SEC, and you know, the way the playoff set more or less plugs in, you know, four Power Five conference teams, you know, into its system. So I would expect Ole Miss or TCU to be in the number two spot. I just think Ohio State will eventually patch those issues, decide on a quarterback, and be able to beat, you know, Michigan State. But, you know, a lot remains to be seen. And, you know, Baylor's still in the hunt. Notre Dame's still in the hunt. Georgia's still in the hunt. You know, there are a lot of teams that could still be around come November 1st.
One team who may not be in the hunt is Auburn, and that was a team that there were a lot of folks who thought they were the best team in the SEC. They struggled to beat Jacksonville State, were blown out by LSU. Were they overrated, or are they just struggling at this point early in the season?
I think it's a bit of both. Obviously, they ran into, you know, a freight train and Leonard Fournette, and no one was going to tackle him Saturday. So that was you know, a tall task for anybody. But, you know, their rush defense has been awful this season, and that's something that they usually pride themselves on, and that's something that, you know, a lot of hype was was building was on their defensive front, and you know how well they matched up against SEC offensive lines, and they've really just done a porous job of you know keeping any rushing attack at bay. You know, obviously they nearly lost the week before, but you know they've got a lot of time left, and I think that's important for any team. Like you know what we've been talking about Nebraska is they're 1-2 for the first time since 1981, and you know that's only happened three times since the 50s, but they haven't even played a conference game yet. So you know there's a lot left to work itself out, and obviously conference play is critical for any team. And so you know they've got time. They've got a couple weeks off until they play their terrible slate of Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Georgia, and then Alabama in the season finale. So they've got some time, but obviously they need to, really ramp up and get on the same page. That way they can be competitive in the SEC.
Let's head out west. UCLA survives that scare from Brigham Young, but USC upended by Stanford. It looks like another one of those wild races in the Pac-12.
Yeah, and obviously Oregon already has a loss, but, that Pac-12 loss is critical. Like I said, conference play is, really important. And, Stanford seems to always be good for at least one, high-profile upset a season. So it'll be interesting to see if they can, build off this and put together a good Pac-12 resume. But yeah, right now the cream of the crop seems to be UCLA. Obviously, they've got an unblemished record and, nearly got knocked off by BYU. But that's a really tough BYU team. And they really got taken to the edge by them, and that's obviously a nice thing to have in your back pocket when they inevitably run into another late game situation and can tell themselves that they've already been there. But I would assume that UCLA is going to be there at the end. I think Oregon obviously has a shot, but like I said, that loss in Pac-12 play is not the easiest thing to rebound for USC. So, we'll see what they can make of it. And obviously, Arizona's still in the mix.
Sure.
Too. So, the Pac-12 is going to be a competitive conference. We knew that going in, and, we'll see how it sorts out.
Yeah, big UCLA, Arizona, that's a big one this week. Your Nebraska team, you talk about being close. You're so close to being 3-0, lost a huge overtime game against Miami, that last-second throw against BYU. Just right at the edge of 3-0, but 1-2, Josh.
Yeah, it's been nothing short on entertainment, I think, is the one big takeaway for Nebraska fans. If that game would have ended in a similar fashion, this last week's game against Miami, if that would have ended in anything remotely close to how the teams played in the first half, I think people would have been calling for Riley's head. They were down 20-3 at the half, and really that was much closer than the score is much closer than the game. Miami just was dissecting Nebraska's secondary, which has been a problem all season and probably will continue to be one heading into conference play. But the team's beating themselves. They haven't averaged as many penalties in years. There's a lot to fix. But like you said, they're so close to being 3-0. They nearly, capped the largest comeback in program history against Miami. They had 23 points. With under 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And, there are shades of brilliance and shades of, them playing above the national average in every metric. And yet there are also these drives that, they'll gain 2 yards and have to punt it away and shank the punt and then be, destroyed down the sideline by an opposing receiver. So there are shades of brilliance and shades of, just travesty. And they've got a lot to look forward to this season, though. They haven't been in the conference game. They have a relatively easy conference schedule. They don't have to play Ohio State. So there's a lot to build from, but at the same time, I think people were hoping that they would get to 10 wins, and right now we're looking like we'd be happy with 8.
One other article you wrote was about Notre Dame, and they have been just beset by devastating injuries, but you talk about how they control their own destiny. I looked ahead at their schedule. They have UMass this week. They play at Clemson later. They host USC. They play at Stanford. And if they could right the ship with the injuries, get some guys to fill in, honestly, they could run the table. I think that Clemson game is the big one for them down the road, though.
For sure. And I think Clemson looked a little bit shaky this week, but I think that's, you know, perfectly fine to have a, you know, a shaky win early in the season. You can kind of get out of your system. But like you said, they've completely been beset by injuries. They just lost their starting safety again, they just lost their starting safety this week. So that makes, you know, three consecutive weeks of losing a critical player on their team for the rest of the year. And, you know, no one wants to see that. And every team has injuries, but it does seem like it's happening more and more to the Fighting Irish, compared to the rest of the country. But like they put together a really great game against a really tough Georgia Tech team, especially defensively. I mean, you really don't have to prep for the triple option all that often, or the wishbone rather, throughout the season. But you know what they did in a week to be able to stop the run and to stop the play action was terrific. And obviously they won the game, and that's just another win on their resume. And as you mentioned, they have a pretty tough schedule moving forward, but a schedule that's tough enough that if they do run the table, they can definitely be in the college football playoff. And I think from the playoffs perspective, that's exactly what they're looking for, a team that's not from the Power Five conference, that can kind of get people off their case about only letting in these, huge, well-known programs. And obviously, Notre Dame's well-known, but to have an independent represented in the college football playoff, I think would do a lot for its status.
Josh, I appreciate the visit. We'll, of course, post links to Josh's articles, and has more coming out, I think, today. So good stuff. Look forward to talking with you next week, Josh.
Thanks so much for having me.
That is Washington Post contributor Josh Planos.
Tries to make a man miss, and he's into the end zone for the touchdown!
Racer football returns to Roy Stewart Stadium on Saturday, September 26th at 6 p.m. when Murray State welcomes the Tennessee Tech Golden Eagles. Enjoy family weekend with a morning 5K hosted by the Racer track and field team, followed by the evening football game. You won't look back at the games you watched from the couch. Be there. Football tickets are still available by calling 270-809-3000. For details, visit goracers.com.
All right, now, as promised, here is the press conference with Joey Chicoria, Racer linebacker. He, I think he recovered a fumble in the second half, had a really good game. Landon Stratton averaged 46.6 yards per punt. He's the OVC Specialist of the Week. And then comments from Racers head coach Mitch Stewart. Coming up on Wednesday's show, Edward Marlowe of the Paducah Sun. Now here's the presser.
Welcome to the press conference. Today we have Joe Chicoria and OVC Specialist of the Week, Landon Stratton. They'll take your questions.
Landon, first of all, Specialist of the Week, an honor as a redshirt freshman. You were booming it out there. Was there anything different? Did you feel good before the game?
I just went out there and actually my warm-up was probably the worst I'd ever had. Just wasn't feeling anything. Just went back to the locker room, got my mind right, got stretched again, just let everything happen, just doing what Coach Coop said, just letting everything go.
Do you have any idea when you walk onto a field that it's going to be a good night or bad night? Any indication where you go, I think I'm going to do well today?
I could tell the first punt, once I got onto the field, just as soon as I hit it, I was like, man, it's going to be a good night for us. I really feel like something good is going to happen for the team tonight.
All right. Joey, tell us about Jarvion Franklin, their big running back. Having to stop him, he's pretty good. What tell us about going up against him?
He's a good player. Big guy, tough to take down. We worked a lot in practice, gang tackling, because it was going to take a lot more than just one guy to get him down. You know, he had only about 80 yards a couple games before, so I mean he was ready. So.
And they seem to be bent on establishing that run early because they hadn't run it well early.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that was one of their biggest problems was their losses, that they didn't establish a run game at all. So I think they're pretty adamant on doing that.
Joey, how did you guys have seen or played three games against the FBS teams? What did you guys learn so far?
I think we've learned a lot about ourselves. I think we've learned that no matter what, nothing's going to go our way. You know, at some point, something bad's going to happen, and it's just how we're going to fight back.
Is the is the level of play at that level much faster than say at the FCS level, or what's the difference?
For me, I would say the difference. I think if you ask our whole team, the difference isn't about the size or the physicality. It's about the depth. I mean, when you go from 60 scholarships to 80 scholarships, and just the resources they have, with more money, having a bigger school and more scholarships, I think that's just what comes into play. It's not necessarily size and speed and strength.
Landon, was there any wind or any weather conditions that helped you with the punting there on Saturday?
Actually, before the game, it was pretty windy, but I got rather lucky once kickoff started. Just everything, wind kind of calmed down, just really just helped me. So
this is an iron leg. That's a great performance. Joey, this season so far, linebackers, everybody has come up with a big game. Jonathan's had a big game. You've had a big game. Toby's had a big game. Jalen's had a big game. Are the linebackers, are you guys drinking something?
I think what it is, it starts in the film room. We're always in there. It's all our preparation has been great. Coach Coop's been doing real well to get us prepared, and I mean we study film all the time, and it plays a huge part. It's very underestimated, but when you can anticipate what's coming, it helps.
Right. Hey, and you and Carson have been more than consistent. He missed a long field goal, but he had the distance and just was a little wide. What have you guys been working on, and how important is that going into OVC play this weekend?
Honestly, just during practice, our big things, especially with special teams, is consistency. So during practice, whether they're doing their O&D, like their special individual stuff, me and Carson just on the sideline, just consistent, just working on our kicks, working on our punts, just especially with kicking, it's a big consistency, a lot of muscle memory. Just all the reps you can get is the best.
Are you guys starting to feel really comfortable this weekend with family weekend? I know last year, Racers lost to Tennessee Tech at Tech. Any sort of thoughts on maybe payback, with them coming to town?
I wouldn't say necessarily payback. I think we just look at it as another game, especially it's start of OBC conference. Right now we're 0-0, so I think we're just real excited to start conference play. And I mean, it doesn't matter who our opponent is, we're going to prepare the same way.
With this being the first conference game, is there a greater sense of urgency perhaps this week?
I mean, we're always kind of preparing the same way. It doesn't matter what team it is, but since it is OVC, I mean, you can feel the energy when you walk in the building.
And about the back-to-back long road trips, now you do get to play at home. Is there kind of a comfort that comes with playing at home in front of the home crowd?
Oh, absolutely. It's nice. It's nice when you get to dress in your own locker room. You know, you get to come. You don't have to stay in a hotel. You know, you get to come to the stadium where you always do business. You're familiar with this place. So,
what do you know about Tennessee Tech so far? What have you seen?
We haven't seen anything yet. Today will be the intro. So,
all right, Atlanta. Just talk about. I know you're from the area a little bit more. Tell us about playing in front of the home crowd.
It's a complete different atmosphere, especially from a kicking perspective. Where, I mean, kickers are kickers, you know. So, no matter where we go, you always get called out as soon as you step off the bus, and it's just nice being here, just knowing that. There's really no hostility, just kind of you go out there, do your thing. You got your friends, your family from back home just around to cheer you on, and it really helps.
You got a long day Saturday. How did you spend the day going to game time? Because there's a lot of time to kill. What do you guys do during the downtime?
Honestly, we had breakfast, had our time to just relax, get our stretches in, just kind of get our mind right for the game. And we left a few hours for the game, just everybody's locked in and focused, and just ready for the task at hand.
Yeah, we had our breakfast, eat, just a couple tips and reminders to go over in the hotel, and nothing too crazy, because I mean we're all the hard mental work is done early in the week, and it's So now it's just, you know, getting your mind to getting your mind right for game day.
All right, gentlemen, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
All right, we have head coach Mitch Stewart. Coach, if you would start with a statement about last week, talk a little bit about this week, and then he will take your questions.
I don't mean this disrespectfully in the least bit, but it sure is good to watch a film with some OVC ball on it. I can assure you that. And get out of all of these watching three-star athletes and all of these big, tall, long, giraffe-looking guys running all over the field. So it's good. It's good to see some new film and some light talent on the video. The game last week. it's like I said after the game. Probably the thing that I was the most proud of was right there in the third quarter when it got to about the 31-6 mark. When they were 30, I think it was 31-6, something like that. It would have been very easy for us to pick up our toys and go home. And I was very proud of the fact that the guys got themselves out of that lull, because there was a huge lull. You could see it. The sidelines were dead. There wasn't a whole lot going right. We were getting pounded on pretty good. Offensively, we were, we were awful at that point. And it was good to see those guys climb out of that rut, because I think that's a little bit different than teams in the past here that I've been a part of, offenses in the past here that I've been a part of. I think usually we would fold our tents and the circus would be done, and we'd have called it quits. But I was very pleased with the fact that we were able to climb out of that rut and keep playing ball. And you know, we had some turnovers there late in the game, man. And I watched the tape today, and DeAndre Cooper gets that turnover, and the game's just about – I mean, it is. It's done at that point. It's done. And DeAndre Cooper, man, he is celebrating his face off, and people are high-fiving him and chest-bumping him and all of that just because, they still had a lot of pride about what was going on out there on that football field. I'm going to tell you now, that was 2 weeks of – that was tough football. Those were two very good teams. It'll be fun – here in the next couple of weeks. I don't know when those two teams play one another, but I sure do want to see it on TV because that'll be a brouhaha there. And that'll be two very good MAC opponents going up against one another. I'm glad to put those 2 weeks behind us and move forward.
I know you don't technically have exhibition play in football, but does it kind of have a feel of that? Because no matter what you've done in the first 3 weeks, none of it would have mattered starting this Saturday.
That's exactly what I told the team after the game. And you kind of have to be careful how you word it to them, because I said, hey, man, I appreciate the efforts and the preparation these first 3 weeks. But the fact of the matter is none of that matters now. You're 0-0. Our season starts now. Nothing that we've done, either good or bad, matters at this point. You know, a lot of people were very fired up about the way we played NIU. It doesn't matter now. The first game, we looked very solid offensively, defensively, special team. It doesn't matter now. All of that stuff is behind us, and this is when the season starts. And it's an every week, man. You better bring your hard hat and your lunch pail and go to work to give yourself a chance at the end of the season to have postseason play.
Also, a contrast to young coaches last week. This week you go against one of the veteran coaches who's, I think he's coached about a million games in Watson Brown. Talk about that kind of.
Yeah, well, when I saw him at the OVC media days, he was funny because every time I see him, he says, hey, son. He's been around for a long time. He was the one that told me, he said, hey, how's everything going? How are you enjoying it and all that? And I said, man, everything's good. And he said, well, don't ever forget, people like winners and they like beginners. And I said, I duly noted. I'll keep that in mind. But he's an unbelievable coach. I've been around for a long time. He has forgotten more football than I know right now, and runs a wonderful program over there in Tennessee Tech. They're always competitive. They do a very good job with getting talent in, and they do an even better job making the talent that they have the most productive that they can make them. So it'll be a tremendous test for us this week.
Who are some of the players that you've seen on Tennessee Tech that'll – might give the Razors some problems?
Well, you know, obviously right now I'm more focused on the defensive side. I usually don't talk to Chris or Boone and those guys until Tuesday about offensively. But, you know, I do know defensively they've got the golf kid, the linebacker number 30. He seems like he's been there for 10 years. My goodness. I recruited him out of high school, you know, and know him very well. They've got two interior D linemen that Mercer had a very hard time moving. I mean, very hard time moving. They remind me of R2 D linemen or R2 interior guys. So I think and then obviously because Coach Bryant's been around for so long, they just they can create so many different looks. I mean, their blitz list, I mean, is just endless. You know, I mean, we went through a blitz cut up this morning, and it took us 2.5 hours to get through all of it, just because they bring so much at you. But from a personnel standpoint, I think that those two interior D linemen, if we can't move them and we can't protect those guys, keep them out of the backfield, we're in for a long day. And then when you factor in, you know, Gott the linebacker, and you get him wreaking havoc on some of those blitzes, you're going to be in for a very long day.
Personnel-wise, how's the health of your team?
We're okay. You know, we're about like I expected to be after the two-week stretch that we just had. It was tough travel. Those 2 weeks, it was pretty tough travel on the kids. So we're doing some things practice-wise to kind of get refreshed, recovered. But we're okay. You know, we've got some nicks and bumps and bruises. Nothing overly serious right now, but you know, we may be a little thin at some spots this week going into the game. We'll just have to see how it goes. You know, Tuesday will be a big telltale sign for us. See how some of these guys move around.
Coach, in your radio show after the game on Saturday, you talked a little bit about how you were disappointed about the first quarter.
Yeah.
And put a lot of the blame on your shoulder.
Yeah.
What changed after the first quarter?
Well, I just I didn't think that I did a very good job of getting – I mean, my goodness, man, you got a guy, Jeremy Harness, who for three games now has had 100 yards receiving or more in all three games. You've got Janoski Davis, who's probably one of the most explosive receivers, you know, that's been on the field up to this point. I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. And for 2 weeks straight, I've had two head coaches at FBS programs come over across, you know, the field after the game and go, man, you got some cats out wide now. You've got at least three guys out wide that could start in this conference right now. And I didn't think that I did a very good job of utilizing those guys early on in the game. And letting KD, I think I kind of put the hamstring on KD a little bit, didn't let him let it go. Because anytime that you play defenses like that and teams like that, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to press you down. They're going to condense their defense, and they're going to put it all on top of you. And if you can't press the ball vertically and you can't take some shots and hit some shots, then they're just going to swallow you up. And I didn't think that I did a very good job of letting it hang out there early and trying to test them a little bit and see if they could run with us and see if our guys could continue to make plays, until kind of in that second half. But then it was kind of – you're in a situation there where everybody in the stadium knows that that's what you're about to do. And it got the O-linemen a little frustrated because at that point they were just pinning their ears back and coming to KD because they knew we were going to have to throw it. So I didn't do a very good job managing the game. I told the offense that. Obviously there's a lot of things we're going to have to correct. And get fixed. But at the end of the day, I put our offensive performance on my shoulders. I didn't do a very good job.
That being said, KD was almost flawless. I mean, he did have that interception late that bounced off of Roman's hands.
Yeah.
And for the second straight week against an FBS opponent, you guys out-big-played Western Michigan. A lot of deep passes.
Yeah.
And then KD found Rhymes there late in the third quarter for several connections. What's building there?
Well, once I stopped being so stupid and let those guys run down the field and take some chances, and we started playing some ball, I think that right now, looking forward, I think the strength of our offense right now is our skilled guys. You know, I think obviously KD, if you give him time, he's going to sit back there and he can do some things. He can go through his progressions, and he's an amazing arm talent. I mean, he can make every throw. You know, he's a big time arm talent. And you got some guys out wide that can run down the field and get open and create space. And we've got to build on that. But at the same time, obviously, it's like anything. You can't throw the ball well unless you can run the ball, and you can't run the ball well unless you can throw the ball. So there's always got to be balance, and you know, we just got to do a better job of finding that balance and finding it early. I thought that the other night, the first quarter and the third quarter was really where we hurt offensively. We started out slow, and then we came out of halftime and we started out slow. So that's going to be a point of emphasis for our football team overall this week is starting out faster.
You haven't played an FCS team yet, but have you been able to get a feel for where you stand, or will you not really know that until Saturday?
I won't really know it. You know, it's kind of like we talked about with our season starting. It's, you know, it's hard to tell just because, you know, you play those FBS opponents, you can't really tell if they may be playing down to your level. Maybe, you know, you don't know what's going on in their coaches' offices and in their meetings on a Sunday after they play you. They may have been ripping those kids about, hey, we didn't play very well. We played down to their level and all of that kind of stuff. So they may not play their best, and you may have played about as good as you could play. You know, you just don't know, especially when you play those teams early in the season. So, you know, this week when we go out, it's going to be a lot of, you know, it'll be a lot of filling the situation out, filling out, you know, like I said, how our offensive skill guys match up with their guys, you know, and can we run the ball a little bit better versus these guys, and can we get home on some blitzes versus these guys, or do we need to sit back in zone coverage and just kind of get a feel of where we're at, because we know who we are as a football team, because I think if any time as coaches, if you get into the third week and you don't know who you are yet, you haven't done a very good job. So I think we know from a schematic standpoint who we are, what we do well. We just got to figure out if we continue to do that well versus our competition. And the things that we may be a little deficient in right now, are those things going to improve because it's versus our competition? So it'll be a little bit of a fill out, you know, that especially early. You know, how are we doing? Where are we at? You know, we always do the same thing with the O-line. After the first series, they come to the sideline and we'll say, hey, man, how do you feel, boys? And sometimes they give you a thumbs up, or like the other night, they give you a halfway thumbs and go, I don't know, coach. These guys are pretty big. They're pretty massive and they're pretty strong. So we'll just have to see how it all pans out.